Hey, welcome back to Politico Tech. Today's Friday, May 17th. I'm Stephen Overly. The rollout this week of the Senate's AI policy roadmap was about as close to bipartisanship as Washington gets these days. You had Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer touting its release alongside his co-authors, Martin Heinrich, Mike Rounds, and Todd Young. Four senators, two Democrat and two Republican, hailing from different parts of the country, a club that, they say, represents different cross-sections of the partisan divide. But as the Senate goes from writing a report to writing laws, the question has to be asked, can that across-the-aisle camaraderie hold up? So that's the first question I put to Senator Young during an interview on Thursday, a day after the roadmap was released. Spoiler alert, he thinks it can, but already votes on some AI bills are breaking down along party lines. Young himself was reluctant to take a firm stance on real legislative proposals where those fractures are forming. On the show today, my sit down with Senator Young. Well, if you're ready to jump in, Senator, we can talk about this AI roadmap and what's ahead.
Well, thanks for having me on. Let's do it.
Yeah, well, welcome back to Politico Tech. You know, the process for developing this AI policy roadmap has been bipartisan from the beginning. The report contains recommendations that the four principals could all agree on. How long can that bipartisanship last now that this is being kicked to the full chamber?
Well, my belief is it can last very long and continue into the future as it relates to the many issues you see in those 31 pages of the roadmap. Those are things that Senator Schumer, myself, Martin Heinrich, and Mike Rounds all agreed on, and we're very comfortable with the language. So you won't see us backing up from the language outlined in the report. Now, with that said, part of the report emphasizes the importance of the committees of jurisdiction, debating certain issues on which we didn't yet feel comfortable weighing in with great specificity because of the continued development of the technology and its adoption by users. So to prematurely regulate or come up with specific recommendations in those areas would have constrained innovation. Our whole emphasis here is on keeping the United States of America in the lead as it relates to AI development and adoption.
One of the ways the report talks about doing that is, you know, funding AI research at $32 billion per year, which is not an insignificant sum of money, obviously. How do you convince your fellow Republicans, especially some of the more, you know, fiscal hawks, to go along with that spending?
Well, I'll answer that directly because it is a time of fiscal concern, even austerity as it relates to budgetary matters. And it's important that we're very careful about our expenditures because we've written off an entire, you know, most of the budget from any further scrutiny, it seems, which is an entirely different matter. But most of the capital that will be invested in AI research, development, commercialization, and adoption will be private capital. So the vast majority of the report you'll find is around coming up with the appropriate regulatory atmosphere so that we can unlock that private capital. But historically, we know that there's essential upstream research and development that won't occur without the investment collectively of the American people through our research universities, DOE labs, DARPA, and other entities. We followed in the report the recommendation of the National Security Commission for AI as of a few years ago. They thought that in order for the United States to continue to stay in the lead as it relates to China and other bad actors, we need to make some critical government investments, as we always have. And they outline getting to $38 million, just over $30 billion per year. But it's going to take some time for us to get there. I think our annual emergency appropriation recommendation is $8 billion, and then it ramps up from
builds
there.
From there, right.
That's right. And so, you know, it will take some persuasion. We owe it to our colleagues to give them a measure of comfort and specifics as it relates to what some of this research will be spent on. Of course, the nature of research is you can only be so specific,
right? It's experimental inherently, yeah.
That's right. I think that with so many of my colleagues and myself emphasizing the importance of investing in DOD and defense spending, and historically, folks on the other side of the aisle wanting to match that dollar for dollar with non-defense spending, there could be an agreement, a coming to terms, as it were, down the road. But that's something we don't outline in the report. That's frankly not something I have any visibility into about how that would all come together, not being a member of leadership.
When you were pushing for the Chips and Science Act, which also included some funding for research agencies, one of the key arguments was, you know, this is important for national security. It's important for our independence from China. Is that the case you're planning to make now for this AI funding?
That's absolutely the case. To the extent we can stay out in front of other countries in the non-defense realm as it relates to AI, research, development, commercialization, adoption, and all the rest of it,
right.
That directly impacts our ability to do the same things as it relates to the defense realm. So there are certain distinct areas, and we touched on them in our report, where DOD is going to have to up its game in terms of procurement and recruitment so that it can continue to be premier force in an AI-enabled world. But outside of those areas, we just need to generally ensure we have the expertise in the private sector, in the governmental sector, and all the rest, in our education institutions, in artificial intelligence generally. This is a general use technology. So to the extent we are the best in the world in artificial intelligence, that will have direct implications for our national security.
And do you view this funding then as comparable to, with the Chips and Science Act, money that was invested in microchip manufacturing? That was sort of an industrial policy about building up America's tech prowess in a particular sector. Is that the same sort of rationale here?
This is a different sort of initiative. There was some investment in the Chips and Science Act in research and development, but in the main, most of the resources in the CHIPS portion of the Chips and Science Act is targeted towards reconstituting an entire ecosystem to take the risk out of an extended supply chain. So I would certainly characterize that effort as an exception to our broader rule where we're harnessing, you know, the advantage of comparative advantage and so forth. In this case, the resources that we speak to in the report, and which have understandably caught a lot of attention, would be applied more narrowly towards research. And most of the other policies we talk about touch on privacy, intellectual property.
Right.
You know, and a whole host of other issues unrelated to research.
You know, when I talk to folks, one of the top concerns I hear about when it comes to AI is, you know, AI-generated deepfakes in elections, you know, things like that. That's one area where the Senate seems to be moving. I'm sure you saw yesterday the Rules Committee passed through three bills from Senator Amy Klobuchar. Two of those, though, didn't have a lot of Republican support, you know.
Yeah.
One addressing AI deepfakes of politicians, another sort of labeling AI content in election ads. Are you supportive of those bills?
Not yet. I need to be persuaded.
What would persuade you?
What would persuade me would, and I have not reviewed them. I'm frankly have been focused on this broader effort in the hope that the committees of jurisdiction could begin holding hearings, considering legislation, and then offering their recommendations in the form of passed bills to the rest of Congress. But I will be following consideration of her legislation and associated hearings closely. I think that the issue of deepfakes and misinformation loom large as it relates to our elections. They have loomed large even prior to this artificial intelligence focus that we've recently been involved in Congress. And the question for me is, an AI-enabled world going to create a step change in our vulnerability to dis and misinformation, or will it create other election-related vulnerabilities that require us to change our fundamental election law? I'm open to those arguments.
This process didn't.
But the arguments have to be made. We shouldn't superficially assume that this creates new and significant vulnerabilities. I will give very strong consideration to those recommendations surrounding, and this may be included in her legislation, that we need effective watermarking and content provenance as it pertains to election advertisement
right,
and electioneering. We cannot have the American people deceived by campaigns in ways that cause them to vote for one candidate and not the other. And so to the extent we can ensure there's greater clarity to the process through innovation, I support that. If it, in the end, requires legal changes, I'm also open to those.
Does that need to happen before November? Should the election be sort of a deadline for Congress to act on those?
Well, there are certainly some of my colleagues, including Senator Klobuchar, who believe it does need to happen before November. Again, I'm completely open to those arguments. That may be unsatisfying, but I think we duly set expectations when we establish this working group that we weren't going to try and come up with one sweeping comprehensive bill and preempt the legislative efforts of our committees of jurisdiction because this is such a broad topic that touches on every area of life. So this is one of those areas that I think requires a lot of vigorous debate, scrutiny, and then ultimately consideration may be appropriate by the broader Congress, and changes in our election law may be appropriate. Some things we did recommend in the report that I think are notable. We have, again, we have a law, the Help America Votes Act. It's been around for a number of years. That act establishes grants to local authorities and states so that they can ensure that they have secure, fair elections that, you know, are consistent with what all of us would like. And those grants can be used, we recommend, for cybersecurity, for educating voters about the threats associated with mis and disinformation. So that may be one area where we can use existing authorities to address some of the concerns we have right now.
There's another bill that I'm tracking. I'm curious if you've formed an opinion on this, and that's the Defiance Act, which is Senator Dick Durbin's bill dealing with non-consensual pornographic images. You know, I know that's an issue addressed in the report. I wonder if you're supporting that legislation.
I am. Of course, we always have to look at the details, but
sure.
I've read the horrific cases of this occurring and would be, because of my reaction to those situations, inclined for us to come up with a solution to that. And it may be Senator Durbin's legislation.
You know, the nature of any bipartisan process is that compromise gets made along the way. And, you know, this 31-page report, is there anything that you feel was left out or you would have liked to seen included at the end of the day?
You know, nothing comes to mind. I think we did a very good job taking, you know, a liberal Democrat from New York, a conservative Republican from Indiana, conservative, you know, from the Dakotas, and Martin Heinrich from New Mexico. I mean, just very different members, all conscientious, but see the world differently and represent different interests and people, and synthesizing our views and coming to terms on a range of things. And so, you know, I think we did a very good job. We, of course, weren't developing legislation. I think it's very important for us to emphasize that we're coming up with a roadmap, and I'm proud of our work product.
Obviously, the House has its own process in the works around AI. Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has said he's going to engage with Speaker Mike Johnson. Have you had conversations with counterparts in the House, and where do you see the two chambers aligning at the end of the day?
You know, I have had conversations, and a number of them, with Congressman Obernolte, who is leading the charge over in the House of Representatives on this effort. He's convened a bipartisan group. They've had numerous conversations and are beginning to get to brass tacks, so to speak, and craft their own bills. He's expressed some warmth towards some legislation that we have been working on over here. So there's been quite a bit of connective tissue between those efforts, in the bipartisan efforts in the House, and what we're doing over here. And very encouraged that Senator Schumer's visiting with Speaker Johnson. And my hope is that we're poised to pass, you know, what I would, I think, characterize as some base hits before year's end. It won't be comprehensive legislation. Well, one piece of legislation I really think we have to get passed is called the Future of AI Act. This happens to have my name on it,
right,
but it's also Senator Cantwell. And what we would propose doing is to put into law the AI Safety Institute that has already been stood up within NIST. The purpose of that Safety Institute is to interface with the private sector and not-for-profits and other stakeholders to ensure that we can establish some voluntary standards on things like transparency, openness, consumer protection, and a host of other different issues. It's, of course, entirely possible and in some areas likely that there will be more work to do. But let's start with voluntary standards so that we can continue to create certainty for our innovators and users alike and at least figure out how to measure the efficacy, safety, and other features of these algorithms.
Senator, thanks so much for joining us on Politico Tech.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overly. See you back here on Monday.